The views and opinions of this program are those of its hosts and guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of 90.1 FM KKFI, Midcoast Radio Project, or its staff and volunteers.
This is The 10th Voice, Kansas City's gay and lesbian radio magazine. The 10th Voice, because you refuse to be silent.
Hello, KKFI listeners, and welcome to Trans Talk, this week's edition of The 10th Voice. I'm Una Nowlin, and behind the board today is our sound engineer and producer, Linda Wilson. The topic of the week is legislative assaults upon the transgender community, and we're going to be focusing on two subjects in particular. First, we will talk with someone fighting back against transgender discrimination, Stephanie Mott, who is the executive director of the Kansas Statewide Transgender Education Project, or KSTEP. She is courageously suing the state of Kansas for the right to change the gender marker on her birth certificate, and she will be discussing her effort and how Kansas put itself in this position of denying valid records changes to transgender persons in the first place. Next, we will discuss the recent legislative efforts in Kansas to pass additional anti-transgender legislation, and we will compare these efforts with activities in other states as well. Sandra Mead will be our guest for that segment, and frequent listeners of this program will remember that not only is Sandra the former chair of Equality Kansas, she was the former hostess of this very show. I'll finish up the show with the community calendar update, but first, let's take a look at some of the LGBT news of the week. Well, my friends, spring has barely begun, and we are already seeing the flowers of ignorance, prejudice, and fear pop forth like so many dandelions of hate. Perhaps that sounds funnier on paper than on the air, but let's move on. In leading news, the Kansas legislature introduced two anti-transgender bills this month, one of which would award $2,500 to anyone who reports witnessing a transgender person using the bathroom which corresponds to their gender identity. As we will be discussing that today, I will spare you the details for now. But in other Kansas news, Governor Brownback signed into law a measure prohibiting Kansas public colleges and universities from denying benefits to faith-based student organizations based upon their membership choices. According to Republicans who forced the bill through the legislature, the prior policy was flawed because it allowed, quote, gays, Muslims, liberals, and other outsiders, unquote, to compromise the liberty of Christians, or to, quote, allow a white supremacist to join a black student organization, unquote, according to Overland Park Representative Craig McPherson. And I must say that I, for one, am glad that someone is finally tackling the pressing issue of gay, Muslim, liberal, white supremacists in our fair state. On Wednesday this week, in response to the city of Charlotte passing an ordinance protecting LGBT rights, Republicans in the North Carolina legislature ramrodded a comprehensive anti-LGBT rights bill through, including a toilet ban for transgender persons. It was signed with incredible speed by Governor Pat McCrory, and I've reported on McCrory before due to his many anti-transgender statements regarding children. Why did all this happen? Because Republican lawmakers were horrified that under the Charlotte ordinance, transgender women might be using the same facilities as cisgender women. And that's really it. The economy, crime, jobs, civil rights, the environment, all of these issues paled compared to the thought that a transgender person might need to pee in a place where they can do so without fear of harassment or assault. When a mass shooting occurs, some just say, these things happen, roll with it. But when a transgender person needs to pee with dignity, they call an emergency session and pass a piece of legislation like this immediately. Several major organizations and corporations, including the National Basketball Association, have lined up to protest the new law, with some claiming they will move events, productions, and even their entire company out of state as a result. Meanwhile, in Georgia, others are threatening to boycott that state if their governor signs into law another measure allowing loosely defined faith-based organizations to deny services and assistance to LGBT persons. Marcellus Owens was the baby-faced 11-year-old who was known as the Obamacare Kid for their appearances touting the benefits of the Affordable Care Act for poor communities. Well, Marcellus has now come out as transgender, leading some Republicans to actually blame Obamacare for her transition, quipped one former Republican senator who fought hard to prevent the passage of Obamacare, quote, "We knew the liberal takeover of our health care system would lead to this. What's next? Kids changing into puppies funded by our tax dollars? ? Personally, I'm fine with kids changing into puppies, but I simply must draw the line at the creepy Mountain Dew puppy monkey baby featured in its adverts, and I urge all Republicans everywhere to prevent the spread of puppy monkey babyism in our churches and schools." The U.S. Department of Justice has released new guidelines this Thursday prohibiting corrections agencies from placing transgender inmates into women's or men's units based solely upon their anatomy at birth. Having the potential to improve the lives of thousands of transgender persons in our federal and state prison systems, these new guidelines have already been criticized by Republicans who are proposing legislation to, and I quote, "restore sanity in our prisons by undoing the progress." When asked whether restoring sanity in our prisons would be better accomplished by increasing funding and support for mental health care, one Republican lobbyist was quoted as saying, "That's nuts." I stated last month that hatred of transgender persons was not an explicit plank in the Republican Party platform, and unfortunately, as often is the case, the party has lowered itself to the occasion. This month, Tony Perkins, the president of the vehemently anti-LGBT rights hate group Family Research Council, was elected to be a Republican delegate and a member of the Republican Platform Committee. While no specifics were given on exactly why Republicans selected Perkins to advise them on LGBT issues, it quite possibly was because Kim Jong-un didn't return their phone calls. Finally, last month, the Republican National Committee passed a resolution which not only states the party will work to block all expansions of government protection for LGBT persons, but they intend to vigorously fight to prevent transgender students from using bathrooms, lockers, and other facilities in line with their gender identity. They also decided, as part of their policy of keeping big government out of our lives, to define the meaning of sex and gender to refer only to that determined by our DNA and birth certificate. One committee member was even quoted as saying off the record that the reason for this action was part of a long-term strategy of payback over the stunning loss conservatives had on the issue of marriage equality. Now, if only they could just choose to leave us all alone, perhaps by pretending transgender persons were all proposed Supreme Court justices, then we'd be much happier. I'm Una Nowling, and that's the transgender news for the week.
The following is a test of the emergency alert system. What you just heard was a test from the emergency alert system. It was only a test. In the event of an emergency, it would have been followed with further instructions. Thank you for your patience. From 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City.
And welcome back to Trans Talk. Identity can mean many things to a transgender person. Most often it refers to our gender identity and how we exist upon the gender spectrum, as well as where we may be going. It may also refer to our social position within our communities of family, friends, and peers. From a legal standpoint, however, identity has a serious meaning which directly impacts our health, livelihood, and even our lives. In this increasingly pervasive age of big data, identity documents are mandatory for participation in the benefits benefits and rewards of society. Recognition of this fact is why 46 states and the District of Columbia will allow, with varying legal requirements, transgender persons the right to change the gender marker on their birth certificates. According to Lambda Legal, only Idaho, Ohio, Tennessee, and Kansas absolutely refuse to change gender markers on birth certificates, and that is why we are here today. Stephanie Mott is a transgender woman from Topeka, Kansas, who writes for the Kansas LGBT newspaper Liberty Press, for LGBTSenior.org, and for Huffington Post. She has published more than 100 articles and provided nearly 400 workshops and presentations on being transgender, and she is the founder and executive director of the Kansas Statewide Transgender Education Project, or KSTEP. She is the founder and director of the Transgender Faith Tour, a commissioner on the City of Topeka Human Relations Commission, and a member of the Topeka Police Chiefs Advisory Board. She is also courageously suing the state of Kansas for the right to change the gender marker on her birth certificate. Stephanie, welcome to Trans Talk.
Thank you so much. Thanks for inviting me.
Let's begin a little bit at the beginning, so to speak, with a walk in history. My understanding is long ago, Kansas did allow transgender persons to change the gender marker on their birth certificates, and then suddenly came a case before the Supreme Court titled In Regards State of Gardner. You know, can you tell us a little bit about that case and why it mattered to transgender persons?
That's a case of a transgender woman who married a doctor who very, very clearly knew everything that he needed to know when they entered into that marriage. And when he died without a will, an estranged son came forward and made a claim for the estate that should have gone to Janelle Gardner. And filed the lawsuit in district court, and actually won in district court. And then the Kansas Appeals Court turned that over, and then the Kansas Supreme Court, without ever hearing any evidence, without any actual hearing or anything, they just decided that it wasn't okay, and that they reversed the appeal court ruling and upheld the district court ruling.
It seems like a very mean-spirited decision in a way, and after that decision happened, I understand that Kansas started taking a look at the policy overall of changing the gender marker on birth certificates, but they didn't really take much action. And then in 2004, a council for the state recommended that the option for gender marker changes be dropped. Do you know why she would recommend that?
I think it's just basically a misunderstanding of what transgender means and about, you know, who we are and the concept that I am not really a woman, which is really unfortunate and frightening and misinformed.
Now, Kansas still took no action, really, to prevent gender marker changes until after the election in 2011 of Republican Sam Brownback as the governor of our state. And then suddenly things started to change. What happened at that point?
And the Kansas Department of Health and Environment changed the policy in 2012. They, without changing the regulation is still on the books, but without changing the regulation, they just decided to stop changing birth certificates for people who are transgender.
Now, my understanding was that the policy was changed in February of 2012 and that Kansas didn't even make any announcement about this. They didn't update their website other than to just simply remove the option.
That's correct. That's exactly correct.
And my understanding, too, is they did not hold hearings on this. They did not receive testimony from medical professionals or other legal experts or transgender persons. It was basically one individual in the office, Timothy Keck, the deputy chief counsel for the Kansas Department of Health and Environment, basically made handwritten notes that resulted in this change that affected so many transgender persons.
Yeah, absolutely. There was no public awareness that the policy was about to change. There was no opportunity for people to have a voice as to why it was a bad idea to change the policy. And Timothy Keck is the person who put this forward. But I mean, there are changes, a lot of changes like that that happened when the Brownback administration began an assault on LGBT people in our state.
To the best of your knowledge, was there any evidence that anyone had been purposely changing their gender marker to try to get around or do an end run around the state's ban on same-sex marriage, as was alleged?
There's absolutely no evidence of that at all. There's no cases of that, and it just didn't happen.
It's simply stunning that, you know, as Republicans very often like to say, an unelected bureaucrat was able to make this sort of change without a public hearing or a vote by the good men and women of the state of Kansas.
Well, they use that to their advantage when it's to their advantage, and they don't use it when it's not to their advantage.
We're going to take a short break here on Trans Talk and return to learn more from Stephanie Mott about her effort.
Two Pakistani women who joined the Sisters of Loretto are trained in solar technologies. They now run a mission west of Lahore, helping people become energy independent. Wings, Saturday afternoon at 2:30.
This Way Out, the International LGBT Radio Magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. The Australian government guts its Safe Schools anti-bullying program, Queer Irish Come Home to the Big Apple, and People's Poets praise Sister Outsider. Those stories and more this week, now that you've chosen This Way Out.
This Way Out airs 2 p.m. Saturdays, right after the 10th Voice.
Hello and welcome back to Trans Talk on 90.1 KKFI. We are talking with Stephanie Mott about her courageous effort to sue the state of Kansas to allow transgender individuals to change the gender marker on their birth certificates. We talked a little bit about the background of how Kansas placed itself in this position of denying a part of our civil rights. And I wanted to ask you, Stephanie, can you tell us a little bit about your transgender journey that also brought you to this point?
The first thing that I would say is it was a journey into authenticity. This is who I've always been, who I've always known I was, and who I was never able to be until finally things got so bad that I couldn't function unless I started living authentically. Everything has changed since then. I've gone from not being able to function in society to being able to live as who I truly am, and gone back to school and participating in the community, involved in volunteering and all kinds of amazing things that couldn't have happened before. I think that's one of the things that we don't talk about enough is the damage that's done to the spirit when you force somebody to try to be who they really are not, and how difficult it is for people to reach their potential when they're forced to pretend to be someone that's not who they are.
When did your journey start?
I mean, I was, you know, 5 years old, I think, the first time I knew who I was, probably before that, but... But I tried to be this man that they were telling me that I was supposed to be, and it didn't function all the way up until 2005. I was 47 years old, and I'd become homeless and had struggled with alcoholism and just absolutely wasn't able to function in society anymore. And I just made a decision that if I was going to be okay, I was going to have to embrace myself as who I truly am. That was in 2005, and then I've been living full-time as who I am since 2007.
Now, I'm just adding this because it is a matter of public record and because I think it's very relevant to the debate on gender marker changes on birth certificates. You also have had your SRS prior to seeking the gender marker change, correct?
That's correct. I had my gender affirmation surgery in May of 2012, just a few months after the policy change. I was not aware at that moment that it had been changed, but when I submitted my paperwork, they denied it because they said they were no longer following the regulation that was on the books.
And how could you know it when they kept it secret?
Exactly.
So here we are, you know, almost 4 years later, and what has made you decide that you are willing to take this step, put yourself out in public, and expose so much of your personal life, and to be blunt, probably a significant amount of income as well, to fight for effectively all of our civil rights in Kansas?
Well, there are a lot of different things that are involved in this, and not the least of which is the fact that 41% of transgender people attempt suicide at some point in their life. There are studies that show up to 50% of transgender teenagers attempt suicide. And the thing that is most applicable to that is whether or not their identity is validated. So when their identity is not validated, their suicide risk goes up. When their identity is validated, their suicide risk goes down. So this whole concept of telling someone that they can't be who they are increases the likelihood that somebody is going to attempt suicide. And, you know, the other part of it is I'm 58 years old, and I've never had documents that express my true identity. I'm not asking anybody to change, amend my birth certificate. I want them to correct my birth certificate because my birth certificate is inaccurate. The physical piece of it only is part of who my identity. Even the surgery didn't change who I am. I was a woman before the surgery. I'm a woman after the surgery. And it's just all this time, you know, the government keeps telling me I have to be somebody I'm not.
Now, astonishingly to many people, when I tell it to them, Kansas is, relatively speaking, mind you, one of the easier states to change some of our identification in. Driver's licenses are not terribly difficult to change, although several folks, including myself, have had problems where the paperwork was mysteriously lost. It normally is eventually found again. Even concealed carry permits can be changed. I'm proud because I was the first person in Kansas to have their gender marker changed on their concealed carry permit. So I'm just making a little plug for myself. But we can also change our passports without an updated birth certificate. We can change our social security information. We can change a lot of things. So some critics may say, what's the big deal? You know, what is the relevance of a birth certificate that you may never use for most of your life?
Because I will be forced to use it, because there'll be a company that says, I need to see your birth certificate in order to hire you. And it's because in the state of Kansas, if I want to register to vote, I have to show proof of citizenship. And the most common document that's used to do that is the birth certificate, which means that I have to show these mismatched documents. When I have documents that don't match, and the survey that was done called Injustice at Every Turn says that 15% of transgender people were asked to leave, that 28% of transgender people met with harassment, and that 3% of transgender people had experienced violence just because they presented these documents that don't match.
So really, your fight is not just a fight for getting some paperwork changes. It is really a fight for protection of our health and safety, employment, and really even our lives in some cases, correct?
Absolutely. The motivation behind it is the fact that there's a direct relationship between their denial of me having an accurate birth certificate and violence against the transgender community.
Now, when we talk about potentially reversing the policy and allowing gender marker changes, now we have some other critics, or, you know, some people would call them concern trolls, especially online, where people say, well, okay, maybe we can restore the old policy, but this takes us down a slippery slope where next folks will be demanding gender marker changes on a whim or almost on a weekly basis, so to speak, without having to have the surgery, any sort of medical treatment, or even counseling. Do you have a reaction to that sort of criticism?
I think this doesn't take into account the fact that when somebody has been presenting as one gender and then begins presenting authentically as who they truly are, that it puts them in danger in every moment of their life. They're far more likely to be unemployed. Their income's going to go down. Their safety goes down. And the question that's not being asked is, why would somebody do that, knowing that they're going to put themselves into this classification of people who are treated with disrespect, whose dignity isn't respected, and who are subject to violence and discrimination?
I think it actually comes back to sort of a disbelief in the phenomenon, the very real physical phenomenon of being transgender. They think we're doing this as a whim or because we want to be drag performers, I guess, or something.
Yeah, I think there's that a total misunderstanding of what it means to be transgender and this idea that becoming someone who you're not already as opposed to just being who you truly are and expressing yourself authentically. And it's not something that anyone would choose to do, especially given the way things are in Kansas right now, because it just makes it so likely that you're going to have so many negative outcomes just because of the way people see you.
And we've seen as well how the problem of official documents that do not have the proper gender identity on them can be a concern. You know, there's been a lot of kerfuffle in the news over the last year on travelers, transgender travelers who are being stopped by the TSA because of an anomaly that shows up on the scanner, as they call it, and thus they have to try to fight with some lower level TSA functionary over why their driver's license says male but they're dressed as a woman.
Yeah, it's just I don't even know what people are thinking when it comes to that, because it's just nobody could possibly know who I am on the inside except me. There's no way that any other human being on the planet would know what I experience when it comes to my gender, and any kind of obstacle that we put up for people to be able to express themselves just totally takes away from their ability to reach their potential as human beings.
Now, I know that you have a case that's pending, which is obviously why the reason you're in our studio today, but to the extent that you are allowed to speak about it, what are the next steps for your particular case?
Well, the state of Kansas had a period of time in order to respond to the initial petition, which has already been filed, and that was supposed to expire on March the 29th, but they sought a 14-day extension. So now it's April the 12th, I believe, is the day that they have to respond by. And then once they respond to the petition, then my attorneys will take a look at it and we'll have a consult about what's the next best step. I think we're prepared to do whatever we need to do to end this travesty.
Now, you are filing in state court only right now, correct?
Right.
Because I know some people were thinking that this was a federal case, and so I wanted to clarify that for our listeners. I'd been asked quite a bit about your appearance on this show.
Yeah, this is a Kansas state court, district court in Shawnee County.
Can you tell me, to the extent that you can, how hopeful you are of a positive outcome?
Well, this is what I believe, is that the state of Kansas has no viable reason to deny me a corrected birth certificate, and that we have presented a case with numerous different arguments for why they should. And I believe that anybody who looks at that and looks at the evidence and looks at the arguments is going to go, why in the world didn't you just change her birth certificate to accurately reflect who she is?
Stephanie, I'd like to just give you a couple minutes here, because the work you do outside of this very courageous lawsuit is so very important, to tell us a little bit about K-Step for a couple minutes and what the organization does and what its goals are.
I'm really proud of K-Step, the Kansas Statewide Transgender Education Project. We were formed in August of 2010, and we're an all-volunteer nonprofit organization in the state of Kansas. Our goal, our mission, is to end discrimination against people who are transgender and their families in the state of Kansas through education. In the meantime, we've done, like, in 5.5 years, more than 400 presentations across the state, every kind of venue that you can think, people who want to learn more about what it means to be transgender, and in jails and police departments and in health agencies and mental health centers and faith institutions, lots of churches that are interested in learning more, because that information just isn't quite out there. But these are people who, anybody who just really wants to learn how to be a better ally, learn how to treat people with more dignity and respect.
And if somebody would like to contact you or your organization to find more information or to ask if you would be available to speak or, to learn more about what K-Step is doing, what would be the best way for them to contact you?
Well, the website is www.kstep.org. It's just KSTEP.org. And that'd probably work, or you can just Google me.
Of course, in this age, Google, of course, reveal all of our secrets. I'm kind of stunned and afraid about what people can find out about me on Google. And right now, across Kansas City, numerous fingers are urgently typing my name into their address bar, I'm certain.
For sure.
Stephanie, it has been a real pleasure to have you here on Trans Talk today. I wish you all the best on your legal effort, and I know that I personally am very grateful for you taking this step and fighting on behalf of all of the transgender community in Kansas by doing so. Thank you so much.
Thank you, and thank you for giving us a voice.
We're going to take a brief musical break here on Trans Talk, and then we'll be back with more and talking about more legislative efforts with Sandra Mead. Hello, and welcome back to Trans Talk. The song you just heard was called Salt by Bad Sons, and it was written about the transgender friend of one of the band members after the band was able to witness the struggles that she went through, both trying to accept her gender identity and to go through the initial stages of her transition. One thing I learned from years of fencing is that you don't try to meet your opponent at their strongest point. If they have a powerful high line with their sword, you attack their low line and so forth. So in a way, it makes sense that religious conservatives, especially those in the Republican Party, have apparently decided that this is the year transgender persons are public enemy number one. In other words, after the stunning defeat of religious conservatives on the battleground of marriage equality, the tactic has changed in the overall strategy of discrimination to attack the LGBT community at its perceived weakest point, our community. According to noted transgender activist Bryn Tannehill, the focus on bathrooms and locker rooms is directly from the playbook of the hate group known as the Family Research Council, which was made public last year. Their plan consists of five key steps towards eliminating transgender rights, and bullet item number three is, quote, transgender people should not be allowed to legally use the facilities in accordance with their gender identity, unquote. Sadly, in my fair state of Kansas, we have seen two very recent legislative efforts to pass anti-LGBT legislation. The first effort was unfortunately successful and targeted the entire LGBT community, but the battle over the second effort is currently underway, and we have the good fortune to have my good friend Sandra Mead here in the studio with us today. Sandra is not only the former chair of Equality Kansas, she is also the former hostess of this very show. And Sandra, welcome back to Trans Talk.
Thank you, Una. It's really good to be back.
I confess I felt really a bit odd saying that, as this program is so closely identified with your stewardship over the years. I feel like I'm welcoming you back into your own house.
Oh, it was never my house in the first place. I'm one in a hopefully a long line of people who are going to contribute to the show. You know, obviously it started with Dana and then Nikki and then myself and now you. You're doing a great job, by the way. Great show.
Oh, thank you very much. Praise from Caesar, as they say.
Oh, nonsense.
I'd like to talk first about the anti-LGBT effort in Kansas, which was signed into law this Tuesday by Governor Brownback, which was described as, quote, an exercise in religious freedom by post-secondary student associations, unquote. Well, that sounds fairly mundane, and who could possibly object to that? Can you tell me what the law actually does, however?
Yeah, isn't that great? They always try to couch efforts at discrimination into such benign and mundane verbiage, right? This is really a terrible bill. The one thing I'd like to say at the start is that SB 175, Senate Bill 175, that was the first piece of anti-LGBT legislation that was successfully passed by the legislature into law since Equality Kansas was founded in 2005. They put a lot of bills forward since then. We've been able to defeat them all until now. So this was really a sad day for Kansas. SB 175 deals with religious-based student organizations' membership requirements at all of the Kansas Board of Regents schools, as well as the community and the community colleges, for example. So it affects Kansas State, Wichita State, University of Kansas, Emporia State, Fort Hays, Washburn, Pitt State, Johnson County Community College, you name it.
So prior to the governor signing this into law, no club or organization could exist or be recognized, at least by the public university in Kansas, unless it allowed any and all students who wished to join to do so. There was a welcome to all sign on all doors, or you couldn't join. This also allowed those organizations to request funding for events, for various student, you know, events, as long as the event was open to all students and had educational merit. So SB 175 changed those rules. No longer is there an all are welcome sign required at organizations that can be formed on campus. SB 175 created what is known as a religious association exemption. This is a religious association exemption to the Kansas Act Against Discrimination. So get this. The Kansas Act Against Discrimination, which has been on the books since, I think, 1974 or thereabouts, since the 1970s, prohibits discrimination in public accommodations on the basis of race, religion, color, sex, disability, familial status, national origin, or ancestry. All good stuff, right? What the legislature and the governor has signed in has created an exception to that so that now you can discriminate. So-called religious-based student organizations are now allowed to deny membership due to their sincerely held religious beliefs. I guess the last thing I'd say was prior to becoming law, this bill was roundly opposed by educational organizations, including, for example, the University of Kansas Senate, the Kansas State Senate, the Wichita State Senate, and on and on.
And, you know, one of the Kansas Republicans who voted for the law claimed, and using the example that what if a white supremacist wanted to join an all-black student group? But really, as you said, this bill only addresses religion. It only carves out an exception for religion, and they apparently weren't concerned about anything else, correct?
Well, actually, that's not quite right. Keep in mind that organizations such as the KKK, I mean, that's what they're saying, but keep in mind that organizations such as the KKK and many other white supremacist organizations, just for example, are often founded as Christian organizations. They believe themselves to be religious organizations. They use aspects of the Bible, for example, as they see it to justify their causes. In fact, any organization could conceivably be founded and find a way to claim a religious affiliation of their choosing, be it fabricated or not, and it would become very difficult to deny those claims. So what this bill does is allow student groups to bar admittance to students for an event and could very well be paid for by all students' fees and use facilities and equipment funded by taxpayer money. So it doesn't just allow discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation and gender identity, which was certainly one of the main reasons for the bill, but it would conceivably allow a religious organization such as the KKK to form, bar students on the basis of race or any other common characteristic, and then they could seek funding from the Student Center for so-called educational events, whose educational merit might be conceivably, as an example, to educate students on the false notion of racial supremacy.
Can a law like this actually even stand up in court, is what a lot of people are asking.
You know, I'm not an attorney, but it's highly doubtful. We don't think that it can withstand legal scrutiny. The law stands in blatant contrast with the 1964 Civil Rights Act, for starters. In the meantime, you know, while we would have to go through the legal process to get this struck down, harm is being allowed. Harm will be allowed, and discrimination will be allowed on campuses. So there will be an interim period while this is on the books where confusion is sowed and harm could occur.
You know, even if a federal court did find against the law, it's also possible the Brownback administration could set up a constitutional crisis like they did when they were ordered multiple times to allow same-sex marriage by both the federal circuit courts and the U.S. Supreme Court. I mean, have you ever seen a legislature and administration that behaved like this?
No, you know, it's really frustrating. Good old Brownback and his legislative allies. You never know what to expect with this governor, right? But based on his track record, you can be certain that whatever he does is going to follow a very narrow ideology. And in the process, he's going to do what he's done in the past during the gay marriage fight. He's going to spend scarce taxpayer money fighting losing battles in the district and circuit courts. You can plan on that for starters. Other than that, you know.
And it's not like Kansas schools are really rolling in extra money right now under this administration. So actions brought under this bill are simply going to take more money away from our schools, correct?
You're absolutely right. Unless, of course, you ask the governor, because he has a different set of numbers and figures than everybody else is using. But you're absolutely right. Our schools are in bad shape. We're losing teachers. We're shutting down programs because of the lack of funding.
Now, I want to get to the other legislative shoe that has dropped recently, which is a bill that has been introduced, basically an identical bill in both the Kansas House and Senate, which is called the Student Physical Privacy Act, another very innocuous-sounding name. Could you tell us a little bit about what that act proposes to accomplish?
Yeah, and there's actually two of them. One was dropped in the Senate and one was dropped in the House simultaneously, and they're identical bills. And they're identical bills because they were actually created by the same group. We think possibly that the Alliance Defending Freedom, for example, is the group that's pushing the same legislation in many states across the country. But House Bill 2737 and Senate Bill 513 were both dropped, and they're both identical. Obviously, this is the latest attack against LGBT Kansans by the Brownback administration and his cronies. And they're doing that by attacking the most vulnerable part of our community, transgender children. Who's more vulnerable, right? The legislation is supposed to ensure privacy based on sex in bathrooms and locker rooms, and in the process using a very ambiguous definition of sex, by the way. Legislation around this, like this around the country, gives the false implication that invasion of privacy is really a big problem thanks to the growing menace of transgender children. It's a vile attack on our most vulnerable children who simply need to do what everyone else does. They need to poo and they need to pee. After all, if you're not pooing and peeing, you're probably dead or dying. And, you know, bringing it back to what you said at the beginning of the show from the FRC, that's really what they're looking for, right? They don't want us to exist.
We're going to take a brief break for a station announcement. Oh, okay. I've just been told we don't have another station announcement. That's great. Well, welcome back to Trans Talk on 90.1 KKFI. Unlike the prior piece of legislation we discussed, Sandra, this act would apply to students of all ages in Kansas, everybody from kindergarten, presumably, up through college, correct?
Yes, it does. All schools are affected.
I mean, it even applies to teachers, administrators, and janitors. Anyone or a visitor that uses a toilet in a school facility, which means that, say, if a transgender mom came to school for a parent-teacher conference and went to the ladies' room and encountered another student in the room, under this law, the student could sue for up to $2,500. How does that even make sense?
Yeah, we call that the bathroom bounty, right? The bounty. So there's a bounty on transgender children's heads. How vile is that? You're right. It doesn't make any sense at all unless you buy into this myth that there's a widespread problem, which there simply isn't. You can't find legitimate instances of invasion of privacy occurring in schools who've had inclusive policies in place for years. It just doesn't happen. What you usually end up, if there are any reports of any problems when you start investigating, it's usually a conservative parent who has raised an issue, not the children. But there simply hasn't been any instances really legitimate that we can point to. And then to make this law even more absurd, you have to understand that non-discrimination policies which are accepting of transgender student identities, they don't enable illegal behavior, whether it's in a school or in a city or in a state. Public accommodations laws that enable transgender people to live their life as they should and go to the bathroom safely in the appropriate bathroom, they don't enable illegal behavior such as stalking, peeping, assaulting, etc. There are already laws on the books to criminalize those behaviors, and they remain in place. So it's really absurd.
We've had on Trans Talk in the past, under your stewardship, as well as later on, you know, Debbie Jackson, a activist for transgender children, who has said quite clearly, the children get it. the children mm-hmm. understand that this isn't a problem. And we've also had on Madeline Johnson, an attorney who has said sex offenders who she had to represent as a public defender, they're not deterred in the least by mm-hmm. legislation like this. They're going to violate when they feel like doing so.
When and where. And this, yeah, all that these policies do enable safe conditions for trans kids and trans people who are at risk, as we know, of real violence. It's not the other way around.
The bill says that a transgender person shall have their sex identified by either their chromosomes or their genitalia at birth, thus meaning that even post-operative transgender persons are still on the wrong side of the law. I mean, this means that a transgender woman with a fully working, you know, vagina, so to speak, would have to go to the men's room at school where she could face verbal harassment or, at worst, rape and assault. Why aren't people more outraged at this?
You know, I think as far as people being outraged, I don't think people really understand what's going on. I think it's great, Una, that we're more visible all the time. There's a lot more. There's even more television shows and characters on TV and stuff like that. But a lot of people aren't watching them because there's such a stigma still in the state about sexual orientation and certainly more so gender identity and expression. There's such a stigma as to what it means to be a proper man and a proper female that if there is a show discussing alternate variant gender expressions and identities such as this, a lot of people simply aren't watching or don't want to watch because they're uncomfortable watching it. So I don't think that we've done enough to educate the community. I don't know what more we can do. I don't know what the right answers are, but I think it's critical and it's key that we do more and better education of the public at large, and then more people will be outraged. As it is now, I think people are uncomfortable, and they just ignore it or don't pay attention to it.
The bill, as I understand it, allows schools to establish single-stall bathrooms and locker rooms throughout potentially every single school from elementary schools up through universities, but does not provide any funding to do that. So this almost seems like another sort of indirect attack upon the Kansas school system, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, and it goes back to it's an attack on our very lives to make us not exist. So what's really heinous about this bill, one of many things besides the $2,500 bounty that's been established on the heads of every transgender student, the bill establishes a requirement to consider requests for privacy arrangements to the extent possible, but doesn't establish a requirement that the facilities be there so that they're available. So that allows the opportunity for denial of any inclusive accommodations on the basis of lack of single-stall restrooms or locker room privacy. In essence, it's a way to push transgender students out of the school, or they sit there all day and end up with urinary infections and can't go back to school. So there certainly may be no net cost to the taxpayers as far as facilities go, because there's no requirement for minimum facility standards for these accommodations that are expected in the law.
You know, that is a very critical point, and it is something that doesn't even just affect children. I have personally interviewed older transgender people who have said, men and women, they were so terrified of the harassment and abuse and potential, you know, crime inflicted upon them by going into the wrong bathroom that they have actually had an accident in public trying to hold it for too long. And can you imagine putting children through that sort of thing as well?
Yeah. And, you know, there was just a study released, I think it was just published last week, as a matter of fact, that ties increased suicidality of transgender students to bathroom conflicts at school, unavailability
yes.
of bathrooms, and being forced to go to the wrong bathroom or being segregated to go to a nurse's bathroom, for example, is another way of pointing out a child of being different. It's another way of separating and segregating them. So schools should be environments where we're teaching inclusivity and acceptance instead of segregation and discrimination. But you know, the whole bathroom thing is traumatic to children, and it adds to the stress, and it's a contributing factor to the in the high suicidality rate of transgender children, unfortunately.
So to the extent that you're allowed to comment on it, how do you see these bills going forward? What are the odds that these will become a clear and present, reality of our lives?
Yeah, it's right now it appears that the Senate bill isn't going to go anywhere. The legislative session is over now. They're actually on spring break, and they're going to be coming back for a veto session. So things can still happen during the veto session, but we're hoping that it's going to be a short veto session and not another one of the longest in history, like last year when the veto session was used to try to address the huge gaping hole in the budget from the Brownback administration. But the Senate bill is most likely to going to go nowhere. But the House bill is very much alive. It's currently sitting in the State and Federal Affairs Committee, which is chaired by the most vocal anti-LGBT member of the House, Jen Pauls. So she could bring the bill up when they come back from spring break with very little notice in an attempt to limit organizational opposition. She could try to get a hearing and even try to get it through on a floor vote. But to be honest, there's very little time. I'm not too sure if it passed there, if it would then make it to the Senate floor and be passed. If it was, we know that Brownback would certainly sign it, but time is running out. So we think the House bill is probably not going on. I'm sorry, the Senate bill is probably not going anywhere. The House bill could still be alive. So I'm worried. Worry is good in this case. It pays to be vigilant.
And even if both bills fail this session, there's nothing preventing them being brought back next session.
Well, and to clarify, the legislative sessions go in two-year cycles that correspond with elections. So the bill that is in the session now, if it doesn't pass this session, it's dead. It can't be brought back after the next election. But they can rewrite and introduce new bills. But
yes,
if these bills don't pass this session, it's the last year of the two-year cycle, then they're both dead. But you're right. They could bring them back next time, next year.
And we will have to, as you say, be eternally vigilant.
Absolutely.
Sandra, thank you very much for coming back to Trans Talk and for helping us so much to talk about this very critical issue.
Thank you very much. And I'd just like to end by telling people to support Equality Kansas. It's a nonprofit organization that does important political work in the state of Kansas, both at the state and local level, and we need support. So you can find more information on EQKS, Equality Kansas. That's EQKS.org.
That is a wonderful cause, and I hope very much that people find out more about the good work that you and others are doing for it. Thank you.
Thanks, Suna.
We have a lot of events to talk about in this week's community calendar, so I'm going to push right through them here. On Thursday, March 31st, the Mid-America Gay and Lesbian Chamber of Commerce and Human Rights Campaign Kansas City will co-present an observance of the International Transgender Day of Visibility. The day and the event are dedicated to celebrating transgender people and raising awareness of discrimination faced by our people worldwide. The event will be held from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. at EJ4 LLC, located at 1818 Wyandotte Street, Suite 200 in Kansas City, Missouri, and I hope to be there myself, as a matter of fact. The UMKC Trans Plus Allies group will be meeting on April 4th from 6 to 8 p.m. to discuss intersectionality and transgender communities of color. Anyone who identifies as transgender or who wishes to be an ally to the transgender community is welcome to attend, and you do not need to be a student. UMKC Trans Plus Allies meets at the UMKC Student Union, room 302, and they will be providing pizza. And please make certain you park in the proper spot or feed your parking meter there, because the UMKC traffic police are brutal, and I speak from personal experience. On Wednesday, April 6th, I and others will be speaking at the Who Am I Intersex Awareness Talk at the UMK Student Union in room 302. The talk will feature testimony from intersex individuals, such as my guest Ciaran from last month's program, as well as a perspective from a professional researcher. This talk will be held in room 302 from 2 to 3 p.m. on the 6th. On Wednesday, April 13th and April 27th, Hear Me Out Toastmasters will be meeting at 6 p.m. at the Like Me Lighthouse. Hear Me Out Toastmasters is an LGBT enthused group which meets to practice public speaking and leadership skills. Every third Thursday, the Equal Trans Support Group meets at Like Me Lighthouse at 5 p.m., so the April meeting shall be on the 21st. Like Me Lighthouse is just a couple of doors down from our studio at 3909 Main Street, Kansas City, Missouri. On Monday, April 18th at 6 p.m., transgender writer and activist Janet Mock will be speaking at the Pearson Auditorium at UMKC's campus. To find out more about the event or register, you can visit info.umkc.edu/LGBT. A transgender support group organized by Dr. Hitten Sony, who was one of our guests last month, will run on the first and third Saturday of the month from 1 to 2:30 p.m. The group is open to all transgender persons, allies, and family members, and the address is 901 Kentucky Avenue, Suite Number 303 in Lawrence, Kansas. If you missed the placement interviews for the Heartland Trans Chorus earlier this month, you still have another chance. On April 14th, the chorus will be holding its first rehearsal at Unity Temple on the Plaza at 6:30 p.m., and they will be rehearsing with nearly 20 singers to perform at KC Pride 2016. And finally, the Kansas City SOFA Group for Significant Others, Friends, Family, and Allies of Transgender Persons will meet on April 6th at 6:30 in the Leawood Pioneer Library Study Room 116, and on April 20th at 6:30 at the Leawood Pioneer Library Study Room 115. For driving directions and other SOFA information, you can visit transacity.org and click on the resources menu.